Welcome to NACSW's Podcast of the Month. Our podcast program makes available recordings of a wide variety of NACSW presentations and discussions on topics of particular interest to Christians and social work. Our Podcast of the Month program features a new podcast every 30 days for your listening pleasure. We hope you enjoy today's podcast.
Okay, so hello everybody. I'm Dr. Kimberly Hardy. I am an assistant professor at the University of Connecticut School of Social Work, and I'm the chair of the Black Studies Focus Area of Studies, a member of our Black Studies Project, and the advisor to the Organization of Black Social Work Students. So clearly my research has nothing to do with black people. Right? Everything is about that. And what I specifically focus on is issues around the black church and religion and spirituality and the African-American community. And so today I want to share with you some work that was done for both a dissertation study and a replication study, the preliminary data of the replication study, where I looked at African-American Christians' perceptions of health-seeking. And it was specifically looking at religious health-seeking, but there are some interesting things in there regarding professional health-seeking as well. So we're going to look at some data, but I thought it would be good to do some history. Maybe I should have given you a clicker. So I'm not going to read this slide to you. You can read it. But basically what it says is, the Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life in 2007 did this huge landscape, they call it their religious landscape survey. And they found that the most religious group of people in the country are African Americans. Far and away more than any other group, and on every single measure of religiosity. I'm going to show you their very interesting chart in a few minutes, and you'll see like the disparity is tremendous. And the Black Church as an institution is not just a spiritual institution. Its history goes all the way back to the period of enslavement in this country. And a lot of what the needs have been of African Americans in this country from slavery to today have been met through, especially early churches, the rural churches as well. So when we talk about, sort of disaggregating the black church or African Americans and religion and faith from sort of broader spectrum of faith, this is a really important reason. Because they're a much more religious population, their institution is sort of more than spiritual role, and continues to be a really, really important aspect of the African American experience. What we don't talk about as much, though, is pastoral counseling. Now, as social workers and mental health professionals, we all know all of the data that show that African Americans are not likely to seek out therapeutic help from clinicians. There's a lot of very valid reasons why. A lot of historical mistrust that's actually passed down generationally. And so the social work profession in particular has sort of abdicated responsibility for this. So they say, oh, well, African Americans don't want to come to clinicians. They prefer more indigenous, informal sources of support. They want to go to the church. And so they say, hey, let's not step on toes. Let them get what they want where they want it. But data from this study show that that isn't necessarily the case. So we need to find out what we are not getting. What don't we know about the pastoral counseling process? Because it is going up. So we'll get to that part. But first, I wanted to give you some background. Why the black church? Up until the 1960s, it was termed the Negro church. Historically, what we mean when we say the black church was these seven independent, totally black-controlled denominations. They're all Protestant, they're not Catholic, so when we talk about the black church in a sort of traditional sense, we're not talking about black Catholics, nor are we talking about black congregations that are part of larger white denominations. So think about the United Church of Christ, so Reverend Jeremiah Wright, or my church in Hartford, Connecticut, Faith Congregational Church. It's a UCC church, a predominantly white denomination, with a largely African-American congregation. We're not talking about them in the traditional sense. But now we've sort of broadened it so that it does pretty much include African-American congregations across the Protestant denominations. That's what we're talking about. But the disaggregation is not something born necessarily of African Americans themselves. The Pew Forum even disaggregates this when they break it down between Christianity and the other religions, they disaggregated into Protestant and Catholic, and then among Protestant denominations, it's the historically black church. So it's been around for a really long time as a sort of separate institution. Now, this is one of the surveys from the Pew Forum. This is the religious composition of the United States based on their data. And so 7% of the U.S. population belongs to historically black populations, churches, and among African Americans, total 59% of them comprise that 7%. So we're not talking about African Americans who are Catholic, for example, or who are members of sort of mainline Protestant denominations or evangelical churches. So the bulk of African Americans of faith, and 80% are in these historically black Protestant denominations. Let me know if I'm going too fast. I'm a DC person by birth, and so we talk really, really fast to get it all in. So this is really interesting. The circles at the top are African Americans. The circles at the bottom, everybody else in the country combined. Okay? So I want you to wrap your mind around that concept for me, because this is how religious African Americans are compared to everybody else combined. So have absolute certainty in the belief of God is 89% for African Americans and about 71 or 72% for everybody else combined. Right? So this is African Americans, Latino Americans, everybody else. Incidentally, the second most religious population, Latino Americans. Believe in miracles, believe in angels and demons, say religion is very important in their lives, they pray at least daily, have an absolute certainty in the belief of life after death. They have a literal interpretation of scripture, and they attend worship at least weekly. So, you know, the rest of the U.S. population is far and away not as religious as this one particular racial group. And so if we're going to do work with African-American communities, it has to involve the African-American church. It just does. Otherwise, we're missing one of the biggest aspects of this population. So back in the days of slavery, it was called a peculiar institution. As we all know, some of this stuff is just things that you all probably already know, but I like to err on the side of we don't know, because even when we look at some of the books written about spirituality and social work and things of this nature, there tend to be chapters on this, where there are some authors who have written whole books on this, Lincoln and Mamiya, Chadwick and Taylor. These are really influential scholar writers who have written whole books on things that get reduced into chapters in these broader social work and spirituality texts. There were actually slave preachers, which I find a fascinating contradiction, that they were free on Sunday morning to preach, and, well, of course, they had to go where their, you know, slave owners took them, but they were free to preach the gospel, and yet, after the sun went down, it was back to being the property of the slave master. So it just seems like, how do you reconcile that in your own mind, you know? But that was the beginning of what is called the calling, or the call, in the African-American community. You can be a preacher in the black church, and you don't have to go to seminary. You don't need an MDiv. You need the calling on your life. And I see some nods, those kind of nods that know that I'm telling y'all I was right, so I'm glad to have the affirmation nod. I wish I had a praying room. Yeah. 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 Wake up and say, I feel like I have a calling on my life to preach. And that has always been sufficient for us, which is both a blessing, because there have been some powerful preachers who have just come from the calling, and then not so much, which is what we're going to get into today. Because we put a lot of, we take religion in the black community so strong that we believe it's just not right to play with the calling. If you don't really have it, then don't say you do. So if you say you do, we believe you, and you get the reverence that comes with being the reverend just based on the call. And so, okay, reverend, hey, good. Now, see, y'all gonna have me jumping. So the thing is, if you say you're the preacher, if you say you have this divine calling on your life, then we believe that, which means a lot of the things that you say have a great deal of weight. Mm-hmm. And we're in the context of this upcoming political, in the next couple of days, mm-hmm. the next election, there are actually African-American preachers who are telling their congregations not to vote because of President Obama's, you know, support of same-sex marriage. Mm-hmm. That has no policy implications. It has no bearing on anything. Mm-hmm. And yet, we're saying, don't go vote for him, if this was your preference, because of his opinion on the thing, which has no bearing on anything. Mm-hmm. He can't sign an executive order and do anything with that. Mm-hmm. But there are congregations who will listen. Pastor said it. Right. And remember the slide a moment ago? Remember the literal interpretation of Scripture. Man shall not lay with man. So there. This is one of the five big taboo topics in the Black church, is homosexuality. So, and that is, I mean, you can do a lot of things in the Black church. You know, pastor somebody come see you in prison. You can kill the man. You came to, you know, prison ministry for a long time, and you got your parole, and the doors of the church were open.
Right.
Next thing you know, you're an usher.
Uh-huh.
And you're a deacon. Now you're a trustee.
Uh-huh.
And next thing you know, pastor sent you to Bible college.
Right.
But the choir director.
Oh,
they were going to pastor every Sunday morning, but they'd be bringing this boy friend to church. Sense of nonsense through faith.
Wow.
Churches were segregated.
Mm-hmm.
So you're in church, we're all in the body, but I'm in like the arm that's up here. African slaves had to sit in the balcony of the church while everybody else was down at the bottom. So they created their own affirming church. They would actually go out into the night, into the woods, and have their own church services out there. And that began the role of the church for African Americans being a safe haven, a literal safe haven, a lot of the time. And abolitionists used there, so there were slave owners who justified slavery being in existence using religion, and abolitionists who said no for the exact reason. So this gives a little bit of the background. We move to a little bit more of a contemporary focus, and what we know about this concept of separation of church and state simply A, doesn't exist in this country anyway, but B, freedom doesn't exist in Black America. It's the church and the state, and there is no separation, and you know it because, for one thing, a lot of the African American leaders from the civil rights movement and the war were members of the clergy. You know, the churches served as places where we went to coordinate what we were going to do. This text by Lincoln and Mamiya, I highly, highly recommend it. It was published in 90, but it's already become a seminal work. You really should get it if you have any interest in this at all. And so it says, from the beginning, the civil rights movement was anchored in the Black church, organized by both Black activist ministers and the laity, and supported financially by Black church members. So this is not just where we go early on Sunday morning. This is the coordinating space for social justice and civil rights for African Americans.
Is that Muhammad?
If we go all the way to today, the Black church is still, aside from Black colleges, any sort of political anything, the Black church remains the most important institution in the Black community. And it does a little bit of everything. They are, in fact, de facto social service agencies. People go there to get all manner of support, everything from food and clothes. There's a big push in terms of health now. African Americans are disproportionately overrepresented in all of these preventable and curable health issues, and we're starting to see the Black church get involved in some of that, particularly around since most African-American pastors are male, getting the men to go and get their screenings and things like this and to bring those workshops actually into the church. But where I live right now is in the counseling piece. And what has been sort of the purview of pastors, black or white, is, you know, issues around marriage and issues around grief and sort of, you know, life stuff as well, but not a lot. But there was a study done, it was a small study, but it was a study done a few years ago that showed that African-American pastors were spending approximately 10% of their time, which was up a good amount, actually doing one-on-one counseling with their congregants. But they are being guided by the call and the word, and that's it. And so, you know, if you have a pastor who says, and this was a qualitative study, and the one of the pastors said, well, if they come in with something I don't know, I just think, what would Jesus do? Mm-hmm. I go to the Word. And I'm like, well, hey, there's nothing in the Word about some of this stuff, you know, and we need you to come and talk to us about some of this stuff too. We're going to work together, but we're going to get back into that space in a moment. So I did a study. I did a study the first time for the dissertation, and, you know, anybody who's ever done a dissertation, am I alone in this doctor's room, or you're working on one? Yes? Okay. You're just trying to get it done, right? Your dissertation chair says, this is not your life's work, and you start off believing, yes, it is, and then you're like, it's been 2 years, this is not my life's work, so it's just to, you know, to pass muster. So we did this study for the dissertation, and the survey was done electronically. There's all sorts of research biases when you do an electronic survey. You're missing people who are older. You're missing people who are less educated. You're missing people who are less wealthy. And you're missing people who are a little less savvy in terms of, you know, filling out these forms and consents that are electronic like this if you consent. And, you know, there's just a lot to that. So we did the study. We got some really good data. We created, I created this survey because when we have surveys that ask people things that have something to do with faith, it's typically one or two questions. They're not worded the way the Black faith community talks. It's like, would you go talk to your clergy person about this? And we don't talk like that. And so it's like, whatever, and it's two questions, and it's really not that substantial. So we needed something that spoke to them. We did the study. We sent the materials out electronically. We got some data back to pilot the survey and found some really interesting data that we're going to go over. Then we did it again. And I keep saying we. I did it again. It's that social worker in me. So I did it again. This time, the UConn School of Social Work, our dean started a research incentive grant. And I'm very happy to say, and my associate dean of research said, I am to always say that I was one of the three inaugural recipients of this grant. So I got $5,000 to replicate the study, because not only are you just trying to get done, but it was an unfunded dissertation. So I'm like, oh my God, I'm just trying to get the numbers out. So when you're funded, you can do a lot more. So we did a systematic random sample of 345 churches, and we took 8. We did the churches, I think the next slide will tell you where, but we did the churches in Prince George's County in Maryland, which is the wealthiest county for African Americans in the country, but also has a great deal of economic diversity. So it was a perfect place to go. It's also in the Mid-Atlantic region, and so it's technically southern, but it's not deep south, and it's a little more north, but it's not like New England and stuff, where I live now, where it's very different, it's still adjusting. So it's a good thing, and because people there rotate in and out a lot because of, you know, the Washington, D.C. Corridor and stuff. Our target sample was 800. We actually had 715 surveys returned, which is really good. We identified the churches. We contacted them to solicit them. If you could get past pastor's secretary, which was no easy feat. I have heard from Miss Esther. If you can get past Miss Esther, finally you get past her on the phone. Most African-American pastors have day jobs. So you're getting phone calls returned at 7:15 in the evening, you know, so you got to stay a little later and wait for those calls to come in. And pastors like to talk. Mm-hmm. So you're trying to tell the story of what you're trying to do. And it's like, I think this is a very good idea. Mm-hmm. You know, a friend of mine, he's also a pastor. And it is a long time. and you know, like, so Pastor, can I send you the survey? You know, so, you know, and but it was good to talk to them, because what I discovered was they don't know this information, and they'd like to know, what are the people thinking that are sitting out staring at them every week? Because another thing that comes along with being the pastor, aside from reverence, is nobody says anything bad to or about pastor. So if he's not saying what they need to hear, they just wait on the Lord, and it'll get right, you know, but that's not necessarily going to be helpful to them. So the participating churches, they got their packets from me in person. For a number of different reasons. Maryland is home, so we don't want to go home.
That's right.
You know, so that was always a beautiful thing. But also because just sort of the broader African-American community has a lot of tension as it comes to, you know, research and what are you doing here? We can all grow up. It's an easy experiment, you know. Mm-hmm. But there's been all sorts of things where they've been taken advantage of. Mm-hmm. And then in the Black church in particular, they're really, first of all, they're talking about mixing faith and science. But, you know, they're from this big, fancy research, and they needed to see me. I needed to sit with them. I got tours of all the different churches. I got to, you know, hear about things. I got to know the possessors once they stopped giving me the side eye. I'll never forget this one particular possessor. She was like, well, you just stand up, okay? Just if I can help me. I'm going to take that possessor in the church, you know. When she, you know, she kept an eye on that. But once you get in, you know, and you establish I'm a human and I'm doing this because I genuinely care, you know, they really want to help you with that. Every church got a $100 incentive, but most of the pastors were like, girl, I didn't think about that $100, but I am, because this was right when we had some big storm in Maryland. And everybody's church group was weekend. So y'all can use that extra $100 in the plate. So I went on putting that down there. So I went down to do at least the initial consent form. We did a survey announcement so that they were made to go in the program that everybody got when they first went in. It said in 2 weeks we're going to be participating in this study, and it told them all about what the study was going to be. The surveys were put into the form, into the envelopes that were self-sealing. So they filled them out right there in the pews, and they sealed them up right there. Mm-hmm. And they were given locked metal boxes to turn the surveys in at the end of service. Mm-hmm. And the only person who had the key lived in Connecticut. Mm-hmm. So they could be sure that Pastor wasn't, you know, this ain't really a study from UConn. This is Pastor's final. Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so they say, oh, Pastor is fantastic. You know? So we really wanted them to be as honest as possible and feel comfortable saying whatever it was. So I got them locked metal boxes to put the surveys in. And then I went down to collect all the materials again and give them their incentive money. So all the churches, when we get done cleaning all the data, because it's still an ongoing, it's an enormous study, they're going to get an aggregate report of their congregation and other congregations. So percentages and things, just to sort of give them a sense of where they are with their own group in there every Sunday. So we looked at a couple of different... Oh, I'm sorry. Yes.
Now, the pastor going to share that aggregate report with the congregation, that up to him?
That is completely up to him. Yes, that's completely. And he can do it because it will be nothing more than percentages. Like, there won't be any sort of identifying stuff. Mm-hmm. Some people did write on their surveys because we gave them space to have any sort of last comments or anything, and people wrote things that would be very self-identifying. And so mm-hmm. I have those things in the study, but that will be part of their report. It'll be all just, you know, descriptive data. We used, again, Prince George's County in Maryland, primarily African-American county. It borders Washington, has over 860,000 residents and is the wealthiest African-American county in the country, even though there was wide income disparity. And there were 345 churches. Like I said, we just did a systematic random sample, took every case, and got the 8 that we... there was a lot of calling before we got our 8, but we did eventually get them. And so one of the things that we put on the survey was around preference for whom... To whom would you go first if you decided to seek, you know, formal help as opposed to talking to friends and family members, when it's really time to take this sort of outside of your circle? For these issues, to whom would you go first? And we gave them the option of an LCSW,
an LCPC, a psychiatrist or a psychologist, and a pastoral counselor, and those professions were not described at all, so that we could see what was the default response, what do people associate with different, you know, issues and different professions, and boy howdy, was it interesting. So for the pastor, let's see where everybody, these are the people, these are the issues they would go to the pastor for first. Go for emotional abuse, physical abuse, after having had an abortion, if I'm contemplating marriage or having marriage problems, if I'm contemplating divorce or after the divorce is over, or grief. And for the most part, these down here are all within the purview of pastoral counseling. So this makes sense. What was a surprise was emotional and physical abuse. And I have a story I'm going to tell you about Pastor T.D. Jakes and physical abuse in a moment. And the pastors they weren't surprised to hear about the after and abortion. because they said, oh, well, they're looking for absolution and forgiveness now. You know, they don't want to come and talk to me beforehand because they know what I'm going to say. So that was very interesting and had some pretty serious implications. For the psychologist, psychiatrist, theirs was a child's negative behavior, sexuality or homosexuality, contemplating suicide after attempting suicide, if they showed symptoms of depression or issues with anger and temper. So that's what they were looking for, a psychologist and psychologist. Then we have the LCPC, the Licensed Certified Professional Counselor, they do finances, contemplating an abortion, contemplating use of alcohol and other drugs, or having a desire to stop using alcohol and other drugs. And for the social worker, who's shocked? You remember that list? That list had 22 items on it. And we were never chosen as the first person more than anybody else. And we never broke double digits. We were never like 12% said they would never. We were nothing. So this is a new study. What's really going on? Yeah. Like, you know.
Did you use social worker or LCSW?
We wrote licensed clinical social worker and then put LCSW as my field. So I don't know what this is. Although I'm not surprised because I have 3 degrees in social work and still all of my family and friends go, well, you understand because you're a psychologist.
Uh-huh.
And I go, no, I'm not. I'm a social worker. Oh, great. So you do like sociology.
Uh-huh.
No. don't do anything. I'm not a professional bias. I can't the sociologist. But, you know, and so they don't know. But that means that they don't know. So the things we didn't put up there were like taking people's kids, bad mouth over, because you know, 95%. You know. So, but this is unfortunate because, as I'm sure all of you know, clinical social workers provide more mental health care than all the other professions combined. It's like more than twice the rate. So we're just not being good advocates for ourselves, I think. People don't know. And it's a good thing for us to be good advocates because we don't cost as much. And, you know, and it makes it more, you know, more accessible to this population. You know, going to a psychiatrist is a challenge. So some of the other findings, this was interesting. They also had this Likert scale, and it gave them all these different statements, and the ones that I was most interested in were the ones we're going to show today. I would not use pastoral counseling because the pastor is the same kind of week. How many people agreed with that? 79% of the respondents agreed that they wouldn't go to pastor for problems because they don't want that in them. They're weak. But that's really tragic, but that's not supposed to keep you from going to get help. But we've still stigmatized, particularly in the African American community, that help seeking means weakness. You're supposed to be able to work these things out among yourself and your circle. I wouldn't use pastoral counseling because I would trust that my issues were really confidential. Mm-hmm. And look how many people agree with that. Mm-hmm. Isn't that amazing? But that's telling, isn't it?
We'll preach about
that. That is telling. And we're going to in a minute because this is working. The numbers, that's one thing. But I've got some statements from the respondents that are pretty intense. I would not use pastoral counseling because I would think the pastor is trained to handle certain issues and look at those numbers.
So let's go back to the beginning of the presentation. Oh, African Americans prefer this informal indigenous form of support. Mm-hmm. So we don't have to do outreach. They don't want to come to us anyway. They're getting everything they need from the past.
And evidently, what there was a presentation I was earlier that was talking about the
government. Oh, we have to connect. Okay.
Okay, I'm sorry. We're taking it. I'm lifting it up. I'm sorry.
I wouldn't use pastoral counseling because the pastor is so close to God that I would feel judged or condemned. Look at those numbers. You can't make this stuff up. Like, this is amazing. And remember, the sample size is humongous. You know, like, this is a lot of people who aren't going because they feel judged sort of through God as through the pastor as the intermediary. I mean, that is huge. What does that say about the level of religion and the importance of it in people's lives? Or the importance of the pastor's yes or no? You know, it's incredible. One of the establishing committee members is also a pastor of the church in Baltimore. And he said that people come to him, and what they're looking for is how would you say this? He said, when they come to me with some of these big issues, they're looking for the permission. The permission is okay. You know, they're looking for me to say it's okay if I say it's okay. And he said, that is a lot of weight. Like, even knowing that he has this calling on his life, even though he's pastor of the church, that is still an awesome amount of responsibility to put on somebody's life. Yes, sir.
So the other thing I take from this is a view that God is judgmental and condemning.
But that's so true.
And what does that say about the perception of how they view God?
Exactly.
And that's another whole issue.
I know that they're serving this. You know, because you will hear say people, God is a jealous God. Yeah. You know, you better die. You know, and things that happen to you bad. Like, there was actually, and this is terrible. But there was a study where, I can't remember the percentage, but it was a large percentage of people thought that individuals infected with HIV and AIDS got it because they were being, you know, cursed by God. Like, that's what they get for being gay. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, but that's the kind of God that you serve? I don't know if that's the God, you know. But this literal interpretation lends itself to that sort of judgmental perspective.
Well, that's what I was saying. In those Old Testament stories with those little interpretations.
Exactly. And, you know, you hear Sodom and Gomorrah, and, you know, exactly, you hear it all the time. And so this is a really, I'm glad that you said that, because it's a whole new way that I'm looking at this life now. Because not only do they feel that there's a wrath from God, but they feel that the pastor can dish out that wrath. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that is really, that's troubling. That's really rather troubling. And this one is interesting. A primary reason I would use it is because my pastor is African American. And look how many people do not agree with that. So now, you have this other thing. So, last academic year, I did I was invited to do a workshop at three different places on overcoming barriers to working with churches. So agencies need to go work with black churches, and they're not doing that. And I had poster boards that I had placed around the room, and everybody got three little stickers, and you get to vote. Each poster board had a barrier on it. So there were things like, I'm not African American, I'm not religious, I'm not Christian, I don't know the rules, I wouldn't feel comfortable. If they wanted us there, they'd come to us. You know, all sorts of obstacles. And I said, it can either be something you know you have, or you know you've heard other people say. And so I actually have a manuscript under review right now about those workshop dots. I mean, I wasn't planning on writing it, but I kept all the papers, and I thought, this is crazy. The majority of the dots were for, I'm not African American. But that doesn't matter to them. So if you're not going to the church because you're not black, and they don't care if you're not black, there is yet another disconnect. Mm-hmm. You know, it's yet another disconnect. And so when this popped up, you know, you put all the data into SPSS, but when you're running the numbers, you're like, no way. And so, you know, so, but then there was, hi, y'all. Mm-hmm. Is it Jackie?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm taking. I'm sorry. Y'all gonna have to edit. I'm sorry. So when we did the dissertation part of the study,
because it was electronic, people could just type. And my dissertation chair, you know how like when you're a kid and you think your parents don't know anything because you're so smart because you're 13, and then later when you're 23, you're like, right, she was so right about that. It's the same sort of thing. My dissertation chair said, I really think at the end of this survey you need like an open-ended thing. And I don't want to do qualitative. I'm not a therapist anymore. I don't need the story. And she's like, okay, I'll say it like this. I'm not signing off unless you know,
well, then somebody can say so.
So at the very, very, very end, because there were two surveys, one that measured religiosity, which was a pre-existing scale. Another one that I can't even remember anymore. It's been that long now. And then mine. So they've gone through this whole Survey Monkey thing. So I'm thinking, nobody's going to even write anything at the back of this. I'm doing it because she told me to. And my first published manuscript is completely based on the things they said at the end. It's fascinating. There were a couple of things. One was a lack of trust. And I added the red so the things would jump out. I hate when people read screens, but you've got to read this. Religious help seeking can be questionable, maybe even detrimental, because faith enters into an emotional realm. Religious providers, if not trained to play or pray, their word, not mine, upon those emotions, causing the sufferer a sense of guilt or shame they wouldn't ordinarily feel after seeking help from a secular provider. I mean, that's fascinating. And yet, if we go back to the beginning, it's, oh, no, this is the preference. This is what they want. They don't want to come to us. So then it says you can't even do criminal background check. And if you ask after those things, he might be offended by the inquiry.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's so you just got to trust, you know, everybody who says they have a calling doesn't necessarily have a calling any longer. I'm just saying. Okay. If you caught that, then
okay. If
you didn't, I'm sorry. You caught it. But think about it. You know, it's like, you know, you can't, you want to ask, you want to say, are you trained in this? But that might be offensive to you, so I'm going to put my mental health in your hands because I don't want to offend you. Like that, what does that say about the weight that they are given? Another two, I used to seek faith-based help frequently. However, my trust was betrayed and I no longer desire to use faith-based help. And it was their exclamation point, like, my trust was betrayed. People gossip too much, even the trusted ones. You know? I mean, what does that say? And some of that is a sad artifact of what really started off as a very good thing. Somebody needed help. Pastor would get the prayer warriors together, the women at the church who could pray a mountain into rubble. And they would put everything in there. Lord, we need to pray for Kimberly. The rent is due. We don't have any money. Like everybody, you know. And then, but they have to be real specific about it. But people are like, do we have a you know, and so, you know, these are the kids, so many of them just get out there, you know, it's just, I'm just saying, this is a lie, that was just a joke, I'm supposed to be, y'all want to take up a collection of things, always need new shoes, okay. Then there was another theme that came up, it wasn't as strong, but I thought that this one was a really good representative of it, that there was bias. And remember what the pastor said when they found out that they would come to the pastor after the abortion, but not before, because they knew what I would say. Well, I don't know what you should just have it in your mind, Pastor, that that's just the answer that you should have. You know, maybe you should be open to whatever the specific situation is. But if you go in and you talk to the pastor and it's already done and done, then A, I didn't know you'd come here because I knew you were going to say that, and B, now that I've come here and you said that, I'm going to get worse. So C, if I act in opposition to that, I'm going to be condemned. And, you know, it's a cycle that exacerbates the problem that they were going for help for in the first place. And then there was another one around a lack of confidence regarding their ability to do this work. I wouldn't seek help from church unless it was regarding a religious issue, like a question of faith. Mental health issues should be handled by mental health professionals, which is who I've sought help from in the past. Or it's hard to share mental illness with your pastor because they're not trained to handle chemical imbalances. And if one feels they need religious help, then they need to counter it with professional help as well, because religion is not objective, it's subjective. And so this was heartening for me because I sort of already believed that this perspective was out there, that the days of African Americans don't go to therapy had sort of started to wane. And so I like getting these very open answers from them, saying, you know, sort of corroborating that. Now, it's a very small sample that this came from. These are three individual, you know, things. But the raw data show that there is some substantiation for that. So, yes, my dissertation chair was me. Not self-directed. Another person said that mental health is a very mysterious illness and very misunderstood, often confused with retardation by the Black community. Then you have religious efforts are riddled with people who don't practice what they preach, aren't always properly trained. Religious counseling programs are increasingly becoming linked to the core character of church leaders. And so they were talking about, because this was around the time that there was a lot of the scandal coming out with the Catholic priests and then the Eddie Long campaign. And interesting, everybody who knows I study religion and spirituality, when the Eddie Long situation in Atlanta, Georgia came up, where he was, you know, supposedly, allegedly being inappropriate with some of the young men at the church, everyone's calling me like, what's up with your boy? I'm like, well, I don't know him. I don't know that brother. Like, you know, so, but they don't have to call me whenever something bad happens at the church, you know. So, but yeah, so they don't have a lot of confidence in the parents that they're trained for this work. So once again, it is not true what people think in terms of we will go to the traditional thing. So this reliance, this traditional reliance, may still be there for some issues, like grief, marriage, divorce, things like that, but not for some of the more specific mental health issues. A woman named Kim Stansberry, she's out in out on the West Coast, and she does work on this population as well. Right, she's in Washington. Is it Washington?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not Washington.
No.
Eastern Washington.
Eastern Washington University. I know she's at one of the Washington universities on the West Coast, and she did a study checking for the literacy or the ability of pastors to determine issues around, you know, can they tell symptoms of depression. And some of them could get it, but only some of those sort of minor ones and that are really, really overt. You know, she's unkempt. You know, when she comes to church now, she's so lethargic. You know, she used to be involved in everything, and now she's not. So it was really obvious one. And then there are things that they're not trained for. I was going to give you the story about T.D. Jakes. So a couple of years ago, this is probably about 6 or 7 years ago now, Bishop T.D. Jakes had a column in Essence Magazine. And it was one of those back page, you know, things every month is something new, on one page thing. And he did one month where he was sort of speaking to the pastors. What are we telling women? Because he had a woman he was doing counseling with, he'd been seeing her for a while because of marital difficulties. He had been telling her to pray on it, which is a very common religious prescription, you know. And so she comes down the office one day, the Bishop Jakes, the session is over, and her sort of early adolescent son, like 13 or 14, is sitting there waiting. And she immediately starts to dress him down. What are you doing here? Why are you, you know, you're not supposed to be here? Where's your father? And that sort of thing. This seems completely irrational with Bishop Jakes. Why are he just waiting for his mom? What's the big deal? You don't understand, Bishop. So she says to him, take your pants down. And there are big gashes in his legs where his father has beaten him with a bicycle chain. And it has taken chunks of flesh out. And you can tell it sort of healed on its own. Why haven't you jumped? Why didn't you say anything? Why didn't you call the police? Why didn't you say that? Well, Pastor, you said the prayer for us. And it hit him. What are we telling women when we say these things? He's not trained. He's never been to seminary or social work school. It's just, what would Jesus do? And so, while we all love the Lord, that is insufficient to handle this situation. So, Pastor Jakes called the police. A husband was arrested. The boy got medical treatment and stuff. But he said we really need to be a lot more mindful about what it is that we're doing. What I have found when I've spoken with the pastors, particularly for the replication study, is their biggest concern is that the faith piece will be subordinated by our fancy clinical mental health science stuff. They need to know that we get it and that their piece of it is just as important as our piece of it, and that when we say let's work collaboratively, it doesn't become, you know, we go to Jesus wept. Okay, now let's talk about depression. You know, like they don't want that. They want parity. And so because they can't be assured of it, they decided that they most places don't want to do anything about it. They do it in-house. And so they'll have these pastoral counseling programs. And I did a web search. Not a lot of black churches have websites, but of the ones who did and that had pastoral counseling programs, it was, you know, well-intentioned, really nice members of the church who listened with a lot of love. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, what do you do if somebody comes in and they're suicidal? You know, like, do you even know where to go in your community for that? And when I did the workshops with the social work agency reps, I asked them, do you know my church has had steeples? Now this room's got to know. Does anybody know why churches have steeples? So, well,
they just have to be a tourist building.
That's right. So the people, especially travelers, could find it. If you couldn't find it anywhere else, if you needed somewhere to stay, you needed some food, you always knew where the church was. So I said, you know, agencies don't have steeples. Pastors in black churches have day jobs. And then they come to church at 7 o'clock at night to do all that stuff in this during the day. And then they get ready to preach on Sunday. They go back to work on Monday. Like, you know. So agencies don't have to. They don't know who you are, what you do. Am I even connecting with the right agency? What's happening right now? But you know where they are. Oh, you know where the right churches are. If you've ever been to Hartford, Connecticut, just drive down Main Street. You can stand on the steps of one and throw rocks at all the others. They're all right there. So you know where they are. It is thus your responsibility to go to them. You're trying to earn their trust. This is a very important, you know, institution in their community, and you should go there. Trust issues around confidentiality and adequate training of pastoral counselors is particularly important to African-American Christians. And race, however, is not as important, which is something that we need agency reps who aren't African-American to understand. If you are good at what you do, and you are compassionate, and you don't subordinate their faith and try to make it seem like their faith itself is an illness, then that's sufficient. Can you help me? That's all they want to know. What you look like is of no consequence, because they are in the church with people who look like them, and what did they say? They gossip too much. So obviously it is unrelated to race. So there are implications for this. So while African-American Christians stated the preference for pastoral counseling, generally, outreach to the community remains vitally important for us as practitioners. Co-facilitating and collaborating with churches around issues of counseling and mental health distress offers a particularly rich possibility for access to the African-American faith community. Mm-hmm. I say this all the time. You get the pulpit, you get the pews. Mm-hmm. There is nobody sitting in a pew that you're going to make a connection with that's going to get you in at, you know, now Olive Missionary Baptist Church of Jesus Christ. Yeah, that's how you know it's a black church. Their name can't fit on the sign. They got the new sign and all that. You know. So, but y'all know all right about that. Y'all know all right about that. My church, back home in Maryland, Mount North Missionary Baptist Church, blah, blah, Jesus West. Okay. You know. So, but this is good. If you can get the pastor, well, of course, the pastor. But if you can get past the professor and get the pastor to be on board and to trust you, then all he has to say is, family, this Sunday, downstairs, we're doing precious reasons. I want everybody to go to God to have trained certain people to help us in certain ways. And everybody will go right downstairs in that basement. It's not even good. Or he might say, well, we'll let Dr. Hardy come up here and talk to y'all. And then you get up there and you talk to them. But if you've been given the mic, then you've been given the permission, if you will. And so there will be listening. So don't try to do this in some roundabout way. That's not going to work. And it's disrespectful. So this is what you must do. This is I'm telling you, I'm pointing, this is what you must do. Mm-hmm. You must do a self-analysis and get critical so that you can get yourself out of the way. Alright, so if you have any sort of beliefs about the black church, any myths or fears or stereotypes, I'm going to feel uncomfortable, they're going to tell me that I'm not supposed to be here. Okay, well you will be fine and you will be strong. Because they need the help that you have to give them. And if the only clients you can work with are the people who make you feel warm and fuzzy, who is your client base? Because I don't know. And you have to own the discomfort in the process just like you ask your clients to do. And I am a firm believer that change only comes from internal discomfort. You ever go on a diet, or you're getting ready to go on a diet, because you're like, oh, I just feel so big. But if you could just look at those changes, one more time, you're like, well, maybe I'll start with one thing. The diet starts that night when you're like, what is this? All those kids, you know, when you feel slothful, you will get off the floor that night and bust out 50 crunches. I mean, so if you're asking your clients to be uncomfortable and make change, then you have to be willing to do the same thing. What you can do, I'm gonna go through a couple of other things. Because I did a little fancy fade, but it takes like forever. So, visit the local churches to establish a relationship. If you went out on a date with somebody you wanted to, it would be like, he's my boyfriend. That's not a relationship. That's y'all met. Go back. Even if you can, I'm already telling you, Miss Esther is going to be much. So, just be ready for Miss Esther, and you have to go back, and you have to go back. And go to service. Don't just go and look for who I talk to about therapy. Go sit in on service. And if you've never been to a black church, you might wind up walking up to the door of the church and you're going to run up there. You just came to pass out brochures, but now you got saved. You know what I mean? You need to get all good. So go and visit them. Establish a relationship with them. Invite them to come to the agency. If your agency has a community event that it does, invite them to set up a table, just like you invite everybody else. Have them on the agenda for whoever's going to be speakers and stuff. If you're going to have an advisory board or a task force, put them on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're talking about urban violence, you're still talking about the black church.
Mm-hmm.
If you're talking about teen pregnancy, you're still talking about the black church. There is no social ill that's not impacting and impacted by the black church. And so, you've got to get those folks to tell you what they know as insiders for their community and as people who have weight in their community. So they are really good insiders to have, and give them real roles on the board, not just, yes, I need a pamphlet on the board. It's to be something more than that. Do an interview with them and find out what their needs are. You know, you'd be surprised the kinds of stuff that they really need, and they just didn't know where to get the help with that. Post in-service training. Post in-service trainings. We've already seen that the training is an issue. They don't have to know how to do multi-axial assessment, but give them good things to see, you know, to use to identify the beginning stages of mental health issues, particularly since a lot of the people who go to church every Sunday are old. So now we're talking about issues around grief, loneliness, dementia. It's not just physical health, it's mental health too, and they need to be attuned to those things. Train them on how to do that. Give them interventions that they can do. There are things they can do to help, you know, clients who come in or members who come in with issues around depression and stuff. They don't have to refer to us all the time, but if they're not going to seminary, then they're not getting the training. And most MDiv programs only have one or two courses in counseling. But they're not getting any of that if they're just going to Bible college.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like that at all. So, and if you're just going about a calling, then you're really not getting any of that. Okay. Something else you can do. Co-facilitate groups and workshops on topics that impact the community. So it doesn't even have to be, you know, a speaking group or anything like that. It can just be, after, you know, church this Sunday, we're going to have this workshop that we're co-facilitating with NACSW, and it's around whatever. And people will probably come back for it. When your agency holds a community event or a meeting, do it in church. People will come if you do it in the church. They're used to that. It's a safe place, and it makes them feel like you're genuinely trying to make a connection. Formalize a bi-directional referral process. We all want them to send their folks to us, but there are times when we need pastor to come in and say, no, this is not what the Lord says.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what I'm saying? Like, you can't just pray on it every week, Sister Joan. You know, you got to move. You know, what does the Lord say? Faith without works is dead. Something.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we need to go in both directions. It's not just having them come to us. And enlist them as consultants for community initiatives. I know I'm probably taking like forever. No, okay, good. Because I'll be done in 4. Right? Okay. Also, we got to read. There's a lot out there. I wrote an article. You can be back. But there's more out there.
right? So read the literature on the black church. Encourage students and colleagues to do the same. When you have, like, I was really, really lucky last spring semester, my dean let me create a course on religion, spirituality, and the black church. It wasn't about spirituality and religion in general. It was about this population. Because Hartford is where most of those kids are going to go work, where they're doing the field placement, and they need to know this stuff. It's bigger than just understanding the role of faith in general. It's a much more substantial relationship than that. So, read these things.
Is this study taking into account the theology of the lecture?
No, but we're getting into that. Because I want to do a study, and we need to do this together. I want to look at... I know, I'm collaborating. Yeah, I could come off with something. So I want to look at how the theology of the pastor is interpreted by the congregation. Do they think that their pastor has a conservative or more progressive or liberal theological orientation? And if so, how, if at all, does that impact their health seeking? At least the contemplation of it. You know, because, you know, some, I think sometimes we have a tendency to go, oh, well, we don't want to put a pastor because he's conservative and he's not, you know, for homosexuality, he's not for abortion. But there are some very heavily faith-based people who don't want the progressive pastor, right? I mean, we never talk about that. You're like, oh, my pastor does same-sex marriages in our church. That's not what God says in the Bible. Like, you know, and I'm really wrestling with my sexuality and I want to not be this, as opposed to I'm wrestling with my sexuality and I want to just live in peace as the person that I am. So the theology is going to be really, really important. But we haven't gotten there yet.
Well, the reason I ask you that is because the black church in America operates out of a theology that's very biblical.
Mm-hmm.
It's a theology that's been around since the days of slavery, mm-hmm. and it's never changed.
Right. Mm-hmm. And there's been tiny attempts, but it's not a wholesale. It is a very interesting system, mm-hmm. how it's managed to replicate itself and still continue to grow, and yet hasn't really, pardon the pun, evolved beyond the space that it used to be. But I think people are kind of getting a little, I think that's starting to become an issue now, as we can see from some of the responses that we got. People are looking for the church to either just be all faith or do all these other things in a much more competent way. You know, and so I want to look at that. I also want to look at why there's no black men in the church. One of the pastors in the study, when I asked him that, he said, it's because of the homosexuality. And I was like, okay. Send agency literature to your churches. Let them know what you do. Assist in the creation of intake, referral, and, confidentiality forms for pastoral counseling programs, so it legitimizes it to the congregants, so they think this is real. Because it is real. There are, you know, there is a code of ethics for pastoral counselors, but it's not the sort of thing that the black church operates from. So help them create these forms for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to worry about that slide. Okay, you might have your question, because I know I'm going to run over my time. Yes, sir.
I have a comment. It was about a month ago, I had a conversation with a pastor. My son was in Chicago, he's in Chicago, and he was talking about the number of kids they had to bury because of street violence. And he was trying to put together a conference called the House of Pain. But as we talked about it, I was involved in the conference. As we talked about it, he talked about what he needed as a pastor himself in his secondary trauma. You know, and having really kind of struggled with, he said, we tried to himself, try to be so strong.
Right.
But then, you know, when you have, you know, constant funerals and you know, all this stuff is going on with trauma in the inner city.
Right.
That he was trying to enlist other pastors to begin to look at that themselves,
mm-hmm.
in their own kind of support.
Exactly.
He said, I've seen a therapist, you know, ain't nothing wrong with me seeing a therapist.
That's
right. I'm getting my own stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, kind of a twist.
Yeah. I think I'm going to have to fit the thing you can do together. But that's very true because, you know, this summer, Chicago's crime rate, the homicide rate for these young kids was absolutely astonishing.
Yeah.
I had lived in Chicago for 5 years, a bunch of years ago, and I remember it being bad, but it's never been that bad.
Yeah.
And that's true. We're not thinking about it. It's just like, you know, therapists don't go to therapy.
Mm-hmm.
comfortable. My advisor in my master's program said, if you're a therapist who doesn't go to therapy at least once in your professional career, then you're not a very good therapist.
That used to be the norm.
Now we're just all so strong, and but you're not only walking around with your own stuff, you're walking around with the confidential things from everybody else. Everybody needs a break, you know, at some point. So I think that's a good thing to look at, is how the pastors are getting
support
that they need as well.
Yes, ma'am. Do you think you would have the same similar findings in a lower economic status? Do you think you would find some of the similar things that you found?
I don't know, because with the electronic survey, there was no way to know. We couldn't, you know, narrow down the geography. We couldn't narrow down anything really except the stuff that was self-identified. With the churches for the replication study, I put all of them in alphabetical order because I know the area. I didn't want to bias the sample myself. And so when we just went through and picked them, I was going to parts of PG County I'd never seen before. And some of the churches were sort of middle income. Some were a little more than middle income, but most of them were around working class. I don't necessarily know that these findings would be replicated in a very low income or a rural church population. So it's very important to remember that this is a more urban sample that we use. So. But see, that's something we can work on. I'm doing that now because of you. Any other questions or anything? Well, thanks for spending 5 o'clock on the phone. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today for NACSW's Podcast of the Month featured selection. We hope you found today's session useful and that it will support your efforts to thoughtfully integrate Christian faith and social work practice. We also hope that you will consider participating in additional NACSW's activities and events, including NACSW's upcoming convention in the fall, our quarterly audio conference workshops that we offer at no cost to NACSW members, and which includes free CEUs accredited by the Association of Social Work Boards, our online continuing education program, and access to dozens of archived podcasts from the members section of our website. Also, we invite you to join NACSW's Facebook group or our Facebook fan page. For additional information about these and other NACSW benefits and services, you can go to our website at www.nacsw.org. Thanks again for listening in today to our podcast session today.